Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, I'm Beth Murray, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by the sensational actress, comedian, and writer Izzy Sutty. Izzy, let's dive straight down your birth canal and start by summarising how many times you have given birth and when.
I have given birth twice on the 4th of October 2014 and the 17th of January 2019.
2019?
Yes.
That is quite recent.
Yes.
So the scars of it, literal and metaphorical, are still lingering then.
They are, although the second one was so much easier than the first one.
That's a textbook thing.
Yes.
Yeah, not that that didn't happen to me, but that's I know that's the way it's supposed to happen, that the first one is awful, and then the second one you've learned how to do it, and you're an expert.
Yes, and that's my partner's sister is a health visitor, and she was a midwife, and she kept saying, after the first one, I was like, I'm never going to do it again, and then she said, it will be easier the second time, it'll just pop out, and I thought, it's so easy to say that, though, you know. But that was the case for me, thank God.
I got told by an elderly male consultant that the second time would be a doddle. And I'm thinking of suing him.
Yes.
But I'm very glad that your second time was good. But that leads me to my next suggestion, is that if we're going to tell the story of your birth, and we usually focus on one birth, that we should maybe focus on the first, because that sounds like it might be gorier and juicier and generally more dramatic.
Yeah, better for a podcast than it took an hour and it hurt a bit for 20 minutes.
Yes. I have had one guest who enjoys giving birth, but generally, I think,
oh,
you know.
God, there's a book called, is it called Childbirth Without Fear? Have you...
Oh, it sounds like the kind of thing I would have tried reading. Yeah,
yeah, I tried with the first. I tried with the first to read all those things, and on the cover is a woman with a baby hanging out of her vagina, and she's kind of screaming. But it looks like she wants to scream, but someone's told her to smile 2 seconds before they take the photo. I'm sure it's called Childbirth Without Fear, and I found the cover photo so funny because it's like, look at what's happening to you, and you're still, but. You know, maybe she was really enjoying it, and maybe, you know, there are people, aren't there, who don't have any pain relief and who have a completely natural birth and it's...
And they breathe it out.
Yeah.
I know that this exists in theory, and in fact I interviewed the very famous writer and I don't know, was she a midwife? I'm not sure she was, but she was a sort of scientist, Sheila Kitzinger, who was famous for advocating natural births, and she was amazing. But she did sort of give you this idea that it was possible to give birth while orgasming. And, you know, it could be this transformative, euphoric experience. And even at the time, before I'd given birth, I thought, you're having a laugh. And I think she really was, because
well, also,
I don't know that
how
many
long
people.
Do her orgasms last?
40
oh, good,
hours.
I'm going for another 40-hour orgasm. Amazing.
I also don't know at what point you're supposed to orgasm. Like, maybe there's just a bit, like a little bit of the transition phase where it's just so painful you need to come.
My God.
So, your first birth...
orgasms were involved.
This is a shame. I must find a guest who orgasmed while giving birth.
That's your mission.
So we're taking you back to 2014?
Yes.
But hopefully the memories are still vivid. So let's take you back to... Are you full term at this point? Have you got to the end?
Yes, full term plus two or three. I think it was plus three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And had it been an easy pregnancy? Had you enjoyed it?
Yes, it hadn't been too bad. I'd felt quite sick in the first trimester and then that kind of went away.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty textbook pregnancy, actually.
Yeah.
I did have this thing called LOPAP A, which...
What's that? I've never heard of that one.
Well, they test for it at King's, which is my local hospital, and I think they don't test for it at all hospitals, which is a mixed... I was going to say mixed blessing. Well, I guess what I mean is sometimes you can know too much. Because yeah. King's is a teaching hospital. They've got amazing facilities. But sometimes, especially as I can be a bit of a worrier, I just thought, oh, God, I'd rather just go in with my eyes closed to these scans and get them only to tell me if it's something definite. Because there are all these things being banded about. So low Pap A. Pap A is, as far as I understand it, a hormone in the placenta or a hormone to do with the placenta. So if there are low levels of it, it can mean nothing, but it can mean that the placenta isn't functioning as it should. So it can lead to a small baby and it can lead to miscarriage or stillbirth.
Yeah.
So
did they find that out quite early on?
Yeah, they found it out at the first scan. So then I had to have extra scans to check the size of the baby. And I don't think it was as low. The level of it dictates what kind of treatment you have. And I think if it's very low, you might have to have a different kind of treatment. But it was low enough for them to give me extra scans, but thankfully not low enough to cause any problems with either pregnancy. I had it with Stefan as well, the boy, and it was lower than with Betty. But
Because scans should be reassuring, but I always found them... Because there's this kind of silence as they move the thing around your belly, and you're thinking, why is the silence? What does it mean?
Yes.
Has she seen something?
No.
So actually, I found them quite stress-inducing.
They're incredibly stress-inducing. I think anyone who thinks... If anyone has got more than one child, they'll probably know what I mean by this. I think with the first child, I suppose it's like with the first marriage, you expect it to kind of be... You've seen it in films, and you have an idea of the way it's going to be, and then you go in and there's all these other couples kind of... I think you can tell whether it's people's first child or not. But anyway, I sort of had this, are we going for the first scan and then we're going to text our parents and stuff? And then it was actually really fraught and I had to have an extra test on that day because of the low Pap A and, more blood tests and so on. And
they're waiting for news.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was actually not as I kind of expected it to be, really. And then having the extra scans is always reassuring if they're okay. Mm. I always want someone to go, it's 100% fine. The baby's going to come on this
immediately.
Day. It won't be painful. Yeah, but no one can do that. So I'm always left feeling a bit kind of like, it's sort of okay for now. But and you're so right about the sonographers, because also I think they're not midwives. They're not. Their job is to be incredibly geeky about measurements.
Mm, it's a very specific talent.
Yeah, it is. And, the vibe in the room isn't kind of... you don't ask questions about discharge in that. I'm sure I asked a question about discharge once and they just looked at me like, what are you talking about? That is not our department at all,
I don't know about you, but I'm always anxious to talk about discharge wherever
anytime,
I am.
Yeah.
Any opportunity.
Impret. Yeah.
Given that you were feeling, stressed anyway, but then with this added level of stress, did you do anything in preparation to kind of calm yourself down or prepare for the birth?
Well, we did NCT and most people were doing hypnobirthing and we decided to do that too. And I did find, because my partner's sister was a midwife then, I think, or had just become a health visitor, unluckily for her, I could text her on a daily basis saying things like,
I
just lay down at the hairdresser's on my back while they wash my hair. Is the baby going to be okay? Because you're not supposed to lie on your back.
Know that you weren't supposed to lie on your back.
Yeah, you're only supposed to lie on your side.
On your side.
So they laid me down on this chair to wash my hair that's... A joke in the local hairdressers because it's kind of like a dentist chair. It goes flat.
Mine always warm people.
Yeah, I like it too. But I did that and then I was like, oh no. And she's like, no, it's fine. but she had a friend who was practicing to become a hypnobirth trainer. So she did it for free, which was amazing.
That's good.
And
that's
she was
£250 saved.
Yeah, exactly. She was great. And so I did that. No. not much else really. I think I was pretty unprepared practically. I remember having one baby grow, which was 0 to 3 months, just hanging.
Some people do that because they feel it's like a jinx.
Yeah, and I think in some countries they don't buy you anything for the baby until it's born.
Yeah,
they,
but then that has practical implications. Sure, yeah. Just at the point
you
in which
do a mad dash
to want to be focusing on the baby, you're hitting John Lewis.
I know.
So we'll come to whether hypnobirthing did any good. So let's just take you to the stage where you realised you're about to go into labour. How did that feel and what was it like and where were you?
I was at home and my partner does a radio did a radio show on Saturdays then. He does it on Fridays now. But it was a Saturday morning and he'd luckily pre-recorded a show in case I went into labour on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was probably about 4 a.m. and I woke up and there were mild contractions, I guess. I was just so excited. I just remember feeling so excited.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like, the first time anyone said that to me, in that feeling of excitement. And I'm slightly jealous because I felt terror, I guess.
Well, don't worry, it soon went away.
But that's an intriguing thing to feel for some. I mean, it shouldn't be. That's should be how you feel, but I haven't heard someone say that before.
Yeah, I didn't expect to feel it really. I was just like, because I was on my own maybe, and for it was like a secret. I was like, oh God, it's happening.
Maybe I'll give birth on my own.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe I'm Superwoman. It'll be that cool.
He can go and do the show. I lay there for maybe an hour or two. It was really early. I didn't want to, because I was sort of thinking, oh, this is it now. So I don't want him to wake up really early unnecessarily. And then I did wake him up and then he rang and said, I can't come into work. And then I went downstairs and did my tax. Because I...
Get that done.
Yes, because it was October and I thought, I know that I'm not going to do it once. So I did my tax and finished it. And that probably took about 2 hours. Quite dweeby about my tax. So
now that is both really impressive and also mental.
I know. But also, I think it made the time go by. It was a kind of way of, it was like, right, I'm not just going to sit around.
It's quite boring though, Dean.
I quite like it. I used to have an Excel spreadsheet. I don't now. Now I've got two kids. So I've had to drop the Excel spreadsheet, but I used to have one.
That's how kids ruin your life.
Yes.
Right, so you're doing your tax while having contractions.
Yes. And then they got stronger and stuff. And then we went in quite early. So I think I finished the tax and then we went in. We probably went in about lunchtime and we went to the front desk and they said hello. And I said, hello, I'm in labour. And they said, and she said, if you were in labour, you wouldn't be able to talk like that.
Oh, that is shade. That is some serious shade.
I know. I was like, oh no, I've just done hypnobirthing. I've got a really high pain threshold. Anyway, then they examined me. I think I was like half a centimetre dilated. So
it's such a familiar story, this.
God, I was thinking, oh, is the pain going to get worse than this?
You just think you're hardcore. Yeah, I can just really take it.
I really did think that. I was like, it's like the other day, the elastic came out of my... of my trousers, like culottes, the elastic came out and I was on the way to meet my friend and I was like, I think I must have lost all the baby weight. It's really weird, but my trousers are falling down. And then she was like, the elastic's come out. So it's just this thing, I'm like, well, it must be that I'm just really hard because I'm not feeling the pain, like without thinking of the other options, which is that the pain's going to get so much worse. Anyway, so she did a sweep then.
Oh, they're so horrible.
Yes. I really remember all the different do you as well remember like all the personalities of the different people involved along the
way? Yes, where they impacted on me either well or badly, they're very much sort of scorched into my brain.
Well, she was really lovely. She was Australian and so nice, and she said I'm going to do an aggressive sweep.
Wow, that's reassuring.
Yes. So she
like really
she wanted
slam
to just,
your hand up there. An aggressive sweep.
Just put a broom up there and sweep it around. So she did that, and I think she actually did me a favour because. But she said, you're not going to have this baby today. It'll be tomorrow. And then I thought, my God.
Some pretty impressive kind of predictions there.
Yes, because except who knows that it wasn't true.
Yeah, it was okay, right.
But yes, I think I like it when people say definite things.
Yeah, that subsequently turn out to be completely wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
So when we went home, we'd got a taxi in and we'd had to say to the taxi, I'm in labour. There's this taxi company that will take women in labour in our part of South London. So we'd rung them and then he'd sort of been like, okay. But then obviously it was very early on. So, but then my friend is around the corner from the hospital. So she drove us home. And then I had this ball, you know, those big...
Yeah, the bouncing birth balls.
So I had one of those and I went into the living room and we put... X Factor on. It was Judges' Houses, I think. It must have been Judges' Houses because it was October. Yeah, because they go to live shows in December, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I suddenly was like, oh my God, this is awful. Like, within about 10 minutes of arriving back. Jane had gone to the shop to get some crisps, and when she came back, I was just like a different person. And then I was saying, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it.
And that's when you realised you weren't hardcore after all.
Totally. I realised that envisaging balloons floating up to the sky took the edge off it. And it did. It really did, actually. But that I needed probably something else as well as that. So then, but then we still didn't go back in because they'd said, don't come back in for ages. And then I went for a wee and there was quite a lot of blood. So... And they said bigger than a 50p piece to come back in. And that was actually the mucus plug, but there was loads of blood there as well. Anyway, so then we thought we ought to go back in because there's quite a lot of blood.
Yeah, or you could have asked the sonographer about the distraction of the same short shrift.
The sonographer.
But yeah, I'd probably want to go back then.
Yes, it felt like the right thing to do. So then Jane drove us back and it was like a different journey from the one... that we'd taken probably only 2 or 3 hours earlier. And every speed bump, I remember going past Dulwich College because it's on the way and just looking through the windows and thinking about, it was a Saturday, but I remember thinking, I bet they're doing some sort of club in there and they're all just having a good time. They're not in pain and I'm in so much pain. Like, and looking at people's houses, just going about their business and thinking,
just jealous of
this
everyone.
This hurts so much. Yeah, I just could... not believe how much it hurt. It was like, and I know everyone tells you it does, but I couldn't believe that you could experience that level of
pain
and not
pass out.
It's
a fairly unimaginable kind of pain.
Yeah.
Not just the level of it, but the type of pain is unlike anything I've ever experienced. Yeah,
yeah, it's
and
true.
It can't really be described. It's extraordinary.
I know. It's like an ancient, rusty cog starting up after thousands of years of being frozen or covered in moss or something, like having to use all its strength to start turning.
That's a good way of putting it, and kind of ties in with what other people have talked about, is how primal they feel when they're going through it. So it would be an ancient kind of pain.
Yes,
and it is, because it's going down, you know, we've all the women who've ever done it have done it, you know, it's come from the same place, even if we've got science and drugs.
I know.
Which we'll come to.
One of my first thoughts after I'd had Betty was, I was just like, Katie Price and Kerry Katona are my new heroes because they've been through this so many times. I suddenly felt like, my God, they've been through this so many times.
It is weird sometimes to think about very, very glossy celebrities who've given birth.
Who look so kind of groomed. And
yeah.
But I suppose they might have had...
They probably get some very good care. I mean, I always think about, you know, the Duchess of Cambridge. She appears on the steps minutes after giving birth in a white dress and, you know, looks amazing. And I guess, well, it is pretty impressive.
Yeah, but it must
also
have been
she's
so
got a lot of
awful
help.
For her.
I know, the expectation.
Tonging your hair when you're being sewn up, basically.
And even, I think even if I'd had that level of help, I still couldn't have done that. I still couldn't have appeared on the steps.
You could.
I don't think so.
You could.
I was quite ripped, and I don't mean in the good sense.
My abs were incredible.
My name's Pete Allison.
And I'm Dave Cribb, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends.
Each week we invite a guest on ask them to pick their favourite episode of Friends, and then we talk about it in far too much detail.
Basically, if you like the show Friends, and you like it when people take things far too seriously, then you might well like this podcast. Search Great Big Owl on your podcast app of choice, and you'll find Friends with Friends right there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So you are now on the way back to hospital, and this time it's serious.
This time it's serious. Yes. So, we had the maternity bag, hospital bag.
Oh yes.
Packed.
Yeah.
Someone had told us to pack 40 maternity pads.
How long are you thinking you're going to be in hospital?
Well, precisely, and I don't know where this list started to get sent around of things that you need for a hospital bag. And added to by various people from the NCT group, and it ended up to be like 30 things long. We had the suitcase that Ellis took to Australia when he went there for 3.5 months, and it was full. So we took that suitcase in initially as well, then it was back in Jane's car. We hadn't even got it out of the boot when we went back in. And they said it was the biggest hospital bag they had ever seen in the reception. Like, it was ridiculous. He'd also been to Pret and bought about 20 packets of cranberry. I think they did cranberries coated with yogurt.
Oh yeah, yeah,
so, yeah.
Why?
They're called cranberries in coats. Because he'd read that you have to have like sustenance that's kind of sweet but also good for you. And
running a marathon, something you he'd pass into your lips.
Yes, yeah. And loads of Haribo and things like that, and lots of food. And then my friend told me to get 2 white nightgowns.
She had white?
2 children. I don't know. So they immediately, well, we'll come on to this, but got absolutely drenched with blood.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's quite odd.
That's just weird.
I know, but I think people forget quite quickly.
Maybe you block it out, but it seems like common sense that it.
Well, why would you tell someone to get white anyway? You just say get a nightgown.
I mean, or blood red nightgown. He can reuse.
I know.
So you turn up with your massive suitcase. Did you get straight in? Did the receptionist believe you this time?
Yeah, she did believe us this time. And I was eating crisps. I was eating crisps between the contractions and then just leaning against the wall for the contractions. And I thought my waters must have broken in Jane's car, but they hadn't. I was sitting on a plastic bag, but they didn't break, actually. I don't know when they broke, but I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah.
Then, yes, they did believe me. So as soon as she examined me, I said, please, can I have an epidural? And she said, yeah, there's no time for any pain relief.
Okay, so you've gone from 0.5 centimetre when you first went in all hardcore, and now you've dilated so much that you couldn't even have an epidural.
Yep, and that was probably only 5 p.m. I think we'd initially been in at 1, so in 4 hours... Yeah.
So how dilated is that? I can't remember what the limit is.
I don't know.
But that is quite far gone.
It is. But also, I just got the feeling that she didn't want to delay things by having an epidural.
Yeah, it can slow things down, can't it?
Yeah. But she would point blank refused. She said, you're going to have this baby within the next few hours. There's just absolutely no point. Mm. And I just had to let it go. So I just had to have gas and air.
yeah, I did that second time around. You know, it wasn't fun. But also, I've heard that, you know, midwives can kind of clock you and be able to tell whether you can take it or not. So maybe you were hard.
Maybe I was hard.
And she could tell. But yeah, having done it second time around with just gas and air, it isn't nice. It turns out drugs do soothe you somewhat.
Yes, yeah.
So did they just take you straight to the labour ward, or did you get a nice... I don't suppose you could get in a birthing pool or anything.
No, I couldn't. I did want to, and we had been to see these really nice rooms. It's so funny to think of the tour that we did, because we were thinking about bringing an iPod and stuff, and it's just like, oh my God, why were we even... The idea of trying to sort out music. I was really
usually
thirsty.
You do get a chance to do something.
Yeah,
like that.
I suppose both times it's been so quick, actually, really, that yeah, there hasn't been any. But we couldn't, because my blood pressure was high, so they had to put this band thing around my belly. They said you can't get in the water, so we just stayed. I think we just stayed. I don't remember going to any other room. I remember going into a room to be examined and then just staying in that room. But we must have been moved to the labour ward from triage.
Maybe you'd been taken straight to the labour ward.
Maybe they could just see. Yeah. I don't remember walking anyway. I don't... But I was in one room pretty soon. And then... Alice would probably remember whether we moved rooms. But then that was it. Yeah. That was it.
So it was quick.
So it was reasonably quick, I suppose. I think we went in about 5 or 5:30, and then she was born about 9 p.m. So mm-hmm. It's all in the same day. So,
yeah.
So it's really only just over 12 hours, sort of 15, 16 hours from beginning to end.
Mm. That's not bad for a first birth.
No. And they wanted me to lie on my back, and I just wouldn't. That was the only thing I just couldn't lie on my back. It felt
also,
like...
that seems quite backward, to coin a phrase, of them to want you to do that, because isn't the kind of more of the thing now is that you go on all fours
yeah,
or you're, so you
feels
can bear down?
Really, yeah, exactly. It feels so wrong, doesn't it, to be on your...
I can't really remember where I didn't want to be anywhere, so I can't really remember what position I wanted to be in, but I know that on your back isn't necessarily... just gravity helps you... if you're upright.
Yeah, it feels, definitely felt right to me to be on all fours. And then afterwards I had this pain across my arms and chest for days and days from gripping the bed. Like, yeah.
I remember getting terrible pains on the inside of my elbows, like the worst muscle ache that I've ever had from that same kind of, like, pushing myself up. And that was pretty horrific. But so there's that phase, which you've described, which is that kind of transition phase where you're sort of convinced you're going to die and that nothing is going to get you through this. But how was it when you actually started to, push?
Well, the I'm going to die phase actually came during X Factor.
Well, I mean, it does for so many of us.
So I think it might have come quite early on for me in a way, because it was as it started to get serious that I was like, my God, no thanks. and then once I got into hospital, I still felt under immense pain and very scared and everything, but I didn't have that feeling of I'm going to be sick, I'm going to not do this. I just had this feeling of this is awful.
Yeah, that makes sense, like, from a kind of technical point of view, that it's supposed to, when you get to the bearing down phase, it feels somehow more positive.
Yeah, something's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I know what you mean. I think, actually, when it came to pushing, which I remember is a very small proportion of the whole thing, I liked the fact that there seemed to be a process that had been followed by many other people and that it would hopefully lead to a healthy baby. Like, it felt like they were going pant, like they knew exactly what they were doing. I think, in a way, for me, the hardest thing with both births was when I was either on my own or in my house and there was no one to go, do this now, who'd had, a wealth
of experience.
Yeah, you
want someone to take control and be in charge.
Yeah.
And because you and your partner generally don't have any knowledge, it's hard for you to do that.
Yeah, it is. And I think... that's why I couldn't ever have a home birth, because I think I'm not the kind of person who responds well to kind of being on their own and going with their instincts in that kind of situation.
Yeah, no,
I know that
like
people
it.
Come out, obviously, when you have a home birth, but I just didn't want to be away from lots of different types of consultants who could help if anything went wrong. And
there are numerous people who can take charge in a hospital, and fewer people who can if you're in your front room. I agree. How was Ellis through this? Is he just eating his Pret?
Yeah, he was just in the corner eating his cranberries and coats. He was good. I was very thirsty. That was all I remember. I didn't want to eat anything. I just was so hot and thirsty.
It's hot.
I took all my clothes off. I think I kept my bra on, as if that makes a difference. Like, you haven't got anything on your bottom.
Maintain some decency.
Yes, they won't see my boobs until I try and breastfeed and then fail to do so. I kept my bra on, but I just took everything off, and I was so hot, and I made them open the windows. And I think I get hot very easily because I'm always hot in bed, and I've always found hospitals to be so hot.
They are too hot.
Yeah. So, yes, that was the thing. I remember being really hot and really thirsty. And Ellis was good, and he kept bringing me water. I didn't eat any of his Pret snacks.
He must have been so offended.
They're taking up from... Actually, I didn't take up much of that suitcase.
The midwife shifting around was, massive suitcase.
Yes, all these 40 maternity pads. He was good, though. He was. I think he was... he always says that people say it's the best day of your life, but it's just incredibly nerve-wracking, and yeah.
It's odd. I don't count it as the best day of my life because of the pain and trauma of it alongside,
And the uncertainty. Joy. You're not... Mm. There's never really a point where you go, it's done, because as soon as the baby's born, which of course is just unbelievable, they've got to do tests on the baby, they've got to perhaps sew you up or whatever, and then you're waiting for the results of their hearing test and the heel prick, and they might have jaundice, and you're not really, I didn't feel with either of them, now I'm on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
It's just a series of kind of ticking boxes, and you're glad that those ones have been ticked and that everything's okay. And
so did you not, because some people have described that kind of sense of euphoria that they have, which is a hormonal thing apparently, as well as, in your head, and it's wonderful. When the baby is born, did you get that?
I certainly got, I think I did, and felt completely surreal and... incredible, completely unreal. I just couldn't believe that this baby had been inside me, and now it wasn't. It was there, and it was a girl, and it was amazing.
Did you know that it was going to be a girl?
No.
So that was a surprise.
That was a surprise. Yeah. Mm.
They kind of swept off to have the tests and stuff. Then you have to give birth to placenta, which always feels like adding insult to injury.
She couldn't breathe that well because she had mucus in her lungs. So a paediatric consultant came straight in, and then he said, "This room's freezing cold. Get a hat on her." And then I felt really guilty for making them open all the windows and stuff because I'd just been so hot. So I really remember that. And then we'd put a hat on her and he sorted her out. But that was a bit of a dicey moment where she was trying to cry and kind of, that's like my first memory really of after she was born. And then, yes, I remember giving birth to the placenta. But I don't remember her being taken away. I think Ellis was holding her. And they had the injection for the placenta to speed it up. Oh, we kept her attached to the umbilical cord for like an hour.
An hour?
Yeah. I think
I know you can do that and it's beneficial, but I didn't know it was for so long.
I'm pretty sure it was an hour. I might be wrong. It might have seemed like an hour. But it was definitely ages. It was like the longest that you could do it.
So
she must have been on me for... God, but then he whipped her off to help her to breathe. So,
yes,
God, I don't
know.
Well,
that's the trouble. Some things are burned into your brain and... you remember them very clearly, but other bits,
I know. I remember us feeling very satisfied with the length of time. So that would tell me that she was still attached to me when he was helping her to breathe, because that happened immediately. But anyway, loads of people in NCT were getting their placentas made into, like, tablets and stuff.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to do it, because... If anything's happening, I just think, well, I should do it too in case it's the right thing to do. So I was like, okay, yes, £120, that's fine. Do you know what?
Do you eat the tablets?
Eat the tablets. And do you know what? It may really help some people. I believe it probably does.
It doesn't do any harm.
And the woman was lovely who did it. It doesn't do any harm, I don't think. But basically, the woman said... they'll let you put the placenta in the fridge at the hospital if it's the night. And it was like 9:30 p.m. And so I said gaily to the midwife, can we put the placenta in your fridge so that I can get it made into tablets? And then she was like, no. Just thinking, of course you're not going to put it next to my Boots meal deal sandwich, this placenta in a Sainsbury's bag. Anyway, so then we rang the woman who really kindly came and met Ellis in the reception really late. I think that was probably about 11 p.m.
And he
midnight,
handed over a plastic bag with a placenta in it.
Sainsbury's bag of the placenta. Yeah.
That's so dodgy and weird.
I also feel like it's a bit London, or at least a bit kind of city. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Maybe not. There's probably people in Devon doing it. I can imagine, actually, that, you know, perhaps...
Or maybe they do the thing where you get the placenta and you bury it under a tree and then it makes the nutrients.
Like that idea a bit better now that it's being made into tablets.
Like the tablet thing. What did the tablets look like? Like paracetamol or something?
They're grey. They're capsules. So...
Do you take
ash.
One a day, or
you can take? I think it was between one and three a day, or something like that. And you get a kind of shriveled twig, basically, with a kind of ribbon tied around it, which is what is left of it after the process of making it into tablets. And the amount of tablets you get depends on how big the placenta was.
And how many tablets did you get?
I just think I got one jar.
And what do you do with the twig?
At first, I kept it, and then I threw it away.
That's so unsentimental.
I'm so like that. I sort of, if I get a thank you card or something, I read it really carefully and really study the picture on it. Then I literally put it straight into the recycling. So I'm like, I don't need to look at it again. It's etched on my memory. I looked at the twigs for 2 days and I was like, I don't need to look at that anymore. Why would I keep that? I hardly keep anything.
Did you just throw it in a normal bin or
recycling? Yeah, in a normal bin, not in the recycling. So. Feared it would contaminate it. And we didn't do food recycling then, but I guess it could have been in the food recycling.
You'd have to take the ribbon off or something.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Bye, twig. Yeah. It's nice knowing you.
And I did take the tablets for a few days, but then I went mad on the day that my milk came in. Then I got mastitis, and then whoever came... So many different women came to the house over the first couple of weeks. But I think one of them said, don't take those tablets anymore because I think they're making you make more milk and that's not helping the mastitis. And so I stopped taking them then.
Who'd know that there would be such a powerful effect?
So there was a woman who came to help me with breastfeeding, and I think it was her. And she was a kind of holistic type midwife. So she kind of straddled both camps in a way, i.e. the sort of very medical side of things would go, why the fuck have you made placenta into tablets? That's such a waste of £100. And you know, someone who goes, eat the placenta raw. So she was kind of in the middle, and she said, I don't think it's a great idea.
Well, you know, it was worth a try, wasn't it?
It was worth a go, you know.
Who knows what effect it had. Did you, just to get graphic for a second, when you had finished giving birth, had you damaged yourself? How are you doing physically?
I had a tear. So what do tears go up to? Is it fourth?
Fourth.
So I think I had a second degree tear.
That's okay.
Yes. But the midwife said, I'm not confident sewing you up. I'm going to get someone else to do it.
I think that's good.
I thought that was good too, although at the time I was like, oh god, it must mean it's a more complicated, but I am glad that
better to admit it than have a go,
to be honest, than kind of and then they injected me with anaesthetic down there, but I also had gas and air. I had so much gas and air, so they said don't stop breathing gas and air because it really helped. And I had this amazing experience. Like,
did
I was
you trip?
Yeah, basically was mad. It was like everything went into a tunnel, and sound-wise, everything kind of went into a tunnel and was really echoing, like it was a really long way away. And everything anyone said felt had a really big delay on it. So I'd hear... So Nia, who's my partner's sister... A lot of her friends worked at King's then in that department. So one of them came in and was like, oh, you're Nia's brother and this is your new baby. And I saw her come in and I was just laughing because I could hear her kind of say,
there this is your baby, 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 baby. And I was laughing so loudly and it was echoing like, ha, 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 ha. And I was saying like, I can hear you all really trying to describe it. And they were just all kind of smiling. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Because it sounds
amazing.
Really disorienting, but you liked it.
I really liked it. There was no kind of edge to it. It was, yeah, it was amazing. And I kept saying, like, I'll do this again if it means I get to have this much gas and air. Like, I think that when you have gas and air during birth, you're not allowed to have enough to get you to that level because you only really have it during the contractions, don't you?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're not, if you don't take it off your mouth, yeah, I guess I wasn't in pain anymore. Well, I was sort of smarting, sort of a different way.
Not in the same way. Because we were just discovering that pethidine that they give you sometimes is heroin, which I didn't know. And I subsequently felt like that was a bit of a wasted opportunity that, you know, I've taken heroin and I didn't enjoy it because, you know, and the theory with that is that because you have it when you're in such amount of pain, it just brings you up to normal or semi-normal levels.
Yeah.
And really, you know, in the same circumstances, you'd have to wait until after the birth when you weren't in such pain to take the heroin.
To see if you really liked heroin.
Yes.
See if it was worth doing it again.
And I guess that's what you got, that you got the hit of gas and air.
In a way that... So perhaps I was in more of a state to see its advantages because I wasn't in pain. But I also think it was the amount that I consumed. It was just out of this world. I'll always remember it.
How do you get hold of gas and air?
Yeah,
you know, outside. Of the
I'm sure there's
experience.
Somewhere in East London where they do like.
Is that like what Poppers is? Maybe that's what Poppers is.
I don't think it is what Poppers is.
Oh, right. Anyway, those are tiny little things.
Poppers is animal nitrate, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is gas and air? I feel like it isn't Poppers because also gas and air doesn't smell and Poppers has such a distinct smell.
Yeah, it probably isn't. But that's what we need to do. We need to get hold of gas
you
and air.
You need to do an like interview with someone, an expert in gas and air.
Well, we've often said that we need like an obstetrician or someone nearby because the number of times where we've gone, what is that called? And nobody can remember. So
Adam Kay.
Yeah, if he wants to, you know, drop by.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll just kind of keep the dilettante feel.
Maybe it's nice if people just be listening really infuriated who know the answer.
Of course it isn't animal nitrate. That's
so
horse tranquilizer.
Yeah.
Just to leave us on a kind of beautiful image, did you have a kind of moment at the end of the birth where, you know, the three of you kind of gathered together in a Del Boy type way?
No. I don't remember that at all. I remember feeling overwhelmed that she was there and that she was safe. I don't remember anything about Ellis, really, apart from him giving me water and then being in the toilet when the head came out. He missed the head coming out. But he was brilliant, and I think it was a very traumatic for him to see me in that much pain.
Yeah, it's not nice for them. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I've got no sympathy fundamentally because they're not doing their work.
My God, exactly. No, but I think it's not nice. Not as not nice as going through that pain, but
no.
I remember feeling completely overwhelmed and so grateful that she was there safely and so full of love for her. But I don't remember a kind of moment. I suppose I thought we're a family now, but there wasn't like I don't know, a moment where we all had a big cuddle and it was just very, there seemed to be always something to do, like help her to breathe and then try and breastfeed, which wasn't very successful. So then I was really worried about that. And it was just kind of this series of
It's a series
things.
Of messy, busy things that you just get swept up in.
I don't think it was really till a few weeks later when we were at home that, you know, you suddenly think,
Here we are.
We're doing it, you know, fed her, she's asleep, we're... You know, for an hour at least, I can relax to some extent. I can have a shower for the first time in a week. You know,
that's the thing you get those little tiny pleasures that give you such joy.
Well, you get such a buzz, don't you, from going? I put mascara on. I can't believe it. You know,
I went to the pharmacist on my own.
Yeah, I always remember my friend saying that she'd been to the shop when she'd had her baby, and that was the first time she'd been on her own for 9 months. And I was like, you aren't ever on your own when you're pregnant. You're so aware all the time of this baby inside you and everything that you can and can't eat and do and things, that really that is the first time that you've been on your own. And it is so weird, I think, when
it's weird,
go outside.
But rather joyful that you kind of relish that separateness that you finally got, you know, for a bit.
Yeah, and but you also expect everyone to look at you and go, wow, you've gone outside. And everyone's just in Sainsbury's buying courgettes.
You don't get the high fives and congratulations that you deserve, frankly. If you could go back to that pre-birth self and give yourself a piece of advice about what to do, what to think, how to feel, what would it be?
I think it would be slow down, because I, as soon as I'd had her, I just tried to carry on working as much as I had, and I basically acted, I looked after her a lot, and then, but also did a lot, so took her with me to voiceovers and to castings, and, you know, got my friend to look after her. I was in the casting, and I'd be just sweating and so stressed all the time, like trying to breastfeed, and couldn't really breastfeed properly, so I had to have sterilised nipple shields wherever I went, and she'd grab them and throw them across the room, and oh my God, it was so stressed all the time.
But it's hard not to be if you're freelance and you don't know when the next job's coming.
It's so hard. But I would say to myself, just please slow down, give yourself a bit of a chance to rest, and not, don't worry, it'll be all right. So the thing is, if you're freelance, there are so many different types of freelancers, and I think if you write, you're lucky enough to be able to at least generate some work for yourself. When I graduated from college, I suppose I was always writing songs, but I always just thought I'll just be an actor. Just an actor.
Just.
Like John Malkovich. not just an actor, but you know what I mean? I thought that's the thing that I'm going to do. I didn't really realise that I would earn sort of a vast proportion of my living from creating things myself. And actually, I could have afforded to take a bit of time off and go, it'll be all right. I can start doing stand-up again after a year. I'll have plenty of things to write about.
It's easy with the benefit of hindsight, isn't it? But that panickiness that you feel about,
I know, and it's so wound up in your identity as well. Yeah, not being left behind in that thing of being a woman and being in your late 30s and kind of go, oh God, you know, I'm going to go back into the industry and I'm going to be a mum, and I'm at that weird age anyway where I can't really play 32-year-olds on telly anymore. I don't feel ready to play a mum of four, you know. It's fine.
No.
It's fine. But so that would be my advice. Slow down. You can't have it all. I used to bloody drag her through. She was 3.5 weeks old, and I took her through Soho in a car seat so I could go and do
a loon in those early weeks, just kind of insane and deranged with tiredness and, you know, hormones. So it's not surprising.
Yeah.
It's very understandable. And what I'm going to do with these bits of advice is I think I'll probably have them made into those kind of neon signs, the uplifting signs that you see in kitchens in North London. And then I'm going to take a hammer and I'm going to smash them until all that's left is toxic splinters.
And then make them into tablets.
Throw away the tablets.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And that was lovely.
And I hope it was
cathartic for you.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for listening to One Torn Every Minute. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us.
Something. But what are you scared of? Join me, Sarah Morgan, for The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror.
The secret lemonade drinker adverts. Geese. That time on Biker Grove when Agnew McParlin got shot in the face with a paintball.
In each episode, I interview funny, interesting people I like, people like Phil Jupitus, Alice Lowe, Richard Osman, Riley Silverman, and Danielle Ward, about their biggest fears in a judgment-free environment. It is spooktacular.
The Fear.
And remember, do have nightmares because they're an entirely appropriate response to the horrors of modern living.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Mom
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.